This episode with Eric Andre was recorded a little bit ago, and we had some technical difficulties, but we were finally able to fix it and share it with you. Enjoy.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar. Yeah. Look at all this beautiful food.
Guys, I'm very excited about my guest today. He is the creator and the force behind the Eric Andre Show on Adult Swim. He also is the creator and lead of his film Bad Trip. His comedy special, Legalize Everything, is on Netflix right now, and it is fantastic. Please welcome my good friend Eric Andre.
Namaste, D-A-D.
Namaste, Eric Andre.
What's happening, my man?
Not much. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast because
you look gorgeous.
You think so?
Yeah,
I do. Really? I feel handsome right now. I'm not gonna lie.
You're a beautiful angel.
You've always been a very interesting man to me. You've been the Dos Equis guy before the Dos Equis guy was the Dos Equis guy. Dos
Equis, really? Wow.
Is that the guy, the most interesting man in the world?
Yeah, high praise. You know that guy's Jewish?
Yes, I know. I actually have. I wrote something for him, weirdly enough.
Really? He's like, stay thirsty, my friends. I'm from Boca Raton, Florida.
He and I were in a casino together, and you would lose your shit if you saw the reaction of people when they see him. They go nuts.
A star, huh?
They go, and especially in the place like a casino, and he was like wearing
Yeah.
Like it was like the commercial.
Amazing. I'm like, hell yeah. I'm sure he gets mobbed for selfies.
But then I was like writing jokes for him, and it was very fun to see him insecure. He's like, I don't
you
know.
You were writing jokes for him? Does he do stand-up?
No, but he got this gig, like a private, talking at some corporate events thing.
And Dos Equis guy?
Yeah, he got paid a lot of money.
To go in character or?
No, not even in character. It's like him in a suit, and then like a bunch of people would like wait in the line, take a picture with him. And then he like moderated some sort of panel, but also like had to do like 10 minutes of material.
That is fascinating to me. But not in character, just as himself, as the actor.
Yeah, just as himself. So I'm Jonathan.
Just as like as Barry Silverstein.
I think it's Jonathan Goldsmith, if I correctly.
So he's just like, yeah, you know, I started acting when I was young. I took some college classes, and I kind of got the bug. That's so funny.
Everyone's got to hustle, man.
We're giving him beers. And like, Dos Equis is such a shitty beer. He's like, got to drink that bullshit all the time. It's not that bad. Actually, Dos Equis isn't that bad, but it's better to be. I'm not a beer guy.
You're not a beer guy, but I will say this. You've always been fascinating to me in terms of your relationship to food because you're kind of, your Instagram is always like, it's like a picture of you like throwing up ranch dressing. And then it's like a picture of you taking a dump in a park. And then it's like a picture of you with Wolfgang Puck hanging out. And I'm like, how does that fit into the Eric Andre lifestyle?
Well, I mean, like, I'm either in character or not in character.
I know.
I'm turning it on or I'm enjoying a nice dinner.
You seem to be one of the bigger foodie comics that I know. And your last tour was worldwide. So did you hit up insane restaurants around the world?
Yeah, the craziest one was in Denmark. I cannot remember the name of this place. What was it?
Denmark?
It was in Copenhagen. And it was a 70... like something can say like a 72 course meal.
It wasn't Noma?
It wasn't Noma. So it's like the new Noma. It's like,
is it like the name of a flower, like geranium or something? Feel like, wait, so 72 courses. How long did that fucking take?
It was like a 4.5 hour. It was insane. We had one of our courses was a tomato water flavored snowball.
What's that?
I think it was, how do you pronounce it? Tomato consomme?
Like, oh, wait. I'm remembering this. I think I'm remembering it off of your Instagram. It was a weird, weird place, right? There was like a lot of wacky, strange shit.
Yeah, it was like you walk in and you're in like an art installation with somebody that you think is another like restaurant patron waiting. And then she turns around and she gives you this like little like fortune, like out of a fortune cookie, and you read your fortune, and then it turns out it's edible paper, and then you eat the edible paper, and then the doors open to this like gigantic wine cellar slash windowed testing kitchen where you see the chefs experimenting. It is like, you feel like a villain in a Blade movie would eat at this place. And then you have, they start giving you cocktails and wine, and they give you little like, you know, appetizers. And then you go upstairs to this room, this other room that's like, it looks like a planetarium. It looks like you're underwater, and you eat there for the majority of the time. It was insane. I mean, but each course is very small. I wasn't like, I went hungry, but I wasn't like super full or bloated. It's like each course is small and it's very paced out so that you could actually enjoy. You're not like super stuffed. It's not like big plates, heavy portions. I didn't feel like super bloated or stuff at the end, but it was definitely an amazing, amazing experience. The frustrating thing about Noma is that we're trying to get in. And then as soon as I made reservations at this place that I'm talking about and like put down the deposit, you had to put the deposit, the guy from Noma emailed me back like, hey, we just had an opening if you want to come in tonight. And I was but that's fine. I'll be back. Sometimes I'm not in the mood for that stuff. Sometimes, like, you know, my girlfriend yesterday made, like, I just got a smoker, a Traeger smoker. She made queso with Velveeta, and it's like, it was the best thing I've ever put in my life.
When it comes to that stuff, I don't have the time to become a pitmaster. I'm like,
yeah, you know what, though? It's not too hard. You throw the meat in, and then you take off.
Oh, right? It's the best. Traeger's the best.
The best. The best.
I love it. All right, we're going to look at some pictures of your fridge right now. You guys can see Eric's fridge on my Instagram, at StandUpDan. Now, Eric, you told me that you just sent me this last minute, and you were like, oh, my fridge isn't clean or anything. I was like, just send it anyway. This is like one of the fucking nicest fridges that we've ever seen on the podcast.
You know why? I'll tell you why. Not only did we just eat a ton of leftovers over the weekend and got rid of a bunch of stuff, but I spilled this giant thing of like this like strawberry liqueur that was in my fridge and it went everywhere. So I recently cleaned. It's usually not this. This is as good as it gets.
By the way, this is what piqued my fancy right here. I usually store my watermelon face up, and this seems like a way fucking smarter way to do it.
Well, take a look towards the bottom, the middle right frame. There's a water saran wrap watermelon. It's the other chunk of
it. I like this though, the face down.
I was making another famous Gabby, how do you say her last name? Mlynarczyk cocktail. You make these watermelon, Thai basil, bergamot, mint ice cubes. Then you also take the juice and you make the cocktail with that watermelon, basil, mint juice, bourbon, rose water, I want to say lemon juice, and there's one other ingredient I'm forgetting. Oh yeah, tomato consomme.
Jeez.
Consomme. And it is so good. We had one last night.
That is wild. You have to make a special ice.
I love the idea of that.
I've never thought about that.
Consommé. Let me hear how it's pronounced.
Consommé.
Consommé.
What is this?
Consommé.
Consommé.
Consommé. But yes, orange flower water. That is also a cocktail ingredient.
Oh, got it. So are you normally a huge cocktail guy, or is this a quarantine thing?
It's a quarantine thing. I started getting into cocktail making, and it's like a whole new world of...
Don't you dare close your eyes.
Whole new world. Yeah, it's I love it. I'm getting a dad bod because of it, but I don't care. I mean, it's great. That right next to it is that's kimchi, pickled kimchi. That is not a cocktail ingredient.
That would be awful in a cocktail. What's this over here? On the top, you've got like a mason jar.
I think that is leftover chili.
Who does more of the cooking, you or your girl?
She does more of the cooking. I do more of the cocktail making. Oh, God, I got to put a lid on those capers.
Maraschino chilies. You got the fancy ones, too. The Luxardos. And then what is this? Oh, those are open capers. Is that for a cocktail, like a martini?
Capers, no. That's just being a Jew. I need some capers on hand.
Is that a Jewy thing, the caper?
I do bagels, lox, cream cheese, red onions, and capers.
What is this Teton? Grass-fed beef? In the freezer?
I was going to put some dogs on the grill, and then it never happened, so I put them in the freezer.
This looks like a fancy ice cream you have over here. I've been fucking ODing on ice cream and wine.
You know what? I'm going to find you a few natural wines that you like. What do you like, red, or you like white wine, or you like it all?
I just don't think that most natural wine is drinkable.
You just haven't found a bottle that you like yet.
I have.
The only difference between natural wine and like industrial wines is just preservatives. There's no added, it's just like weird chemicals. The only thing that you're reacting to is chemicals, basically, that preserve the shelf life. There's no different, like the natural wine is just wine. It's just grapes with yeast fermented and turned into a wine.
I'm with you, but I think it's a lot harder to make wine good when you're not using those chemicals and stuff. So you have to be a really great winemaker, which there's a couple. There's one in Beaujolais I just had.
Those chemicals are pretty harsh. You should look at a list of those. It's not like anything you want in your body. It's
shy of
formaldehyde.
I'm not saying I want the chemicals. I'm saying when you don't use the chemicals. And look, I'm constantly on the search for great natural wines.
I think you probably like a full body heavy red wine, and a lot of natural reds are like much lighter, but you can find heavy ass natural reds.
I feel like you're judging me based on
pesticide
on my opening salvo here.
I just, when I hear people say that, I'm like, you're only reacting to the flavor of like formaldehyde. They put milk in it sometimes to preserve it.
Oh yeah,
like,
I know. They put
like it's like battery acid. It's like that's the only, there's no, I think people think of natural wine as like, it's like kombucha or something like that, but it's just wine. How wine was made for like 10,000 years.
Okay, hold on a second, because I feel like you're judging. You've judged me without listening to everything that I'm saying.
I had the same conversation with a couple other comedians.
I'm not,
that were like, natural wine, what is that? It tastes like apple juice. And it's like, and then
you're lumping me in a category.
I'm unfairly lumping you. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm unfairly lumping you.
My regular restaurant that I'd go to a couple times a week is a natural wine bar. So
yeah, which one?
Marvin.
Where's that?
It's in West Hollywood. It's one of my favorite restaurants.
Marvin?
Yeah.
It's a natural wine bar?
Yeah, it's one of the best restaurants.
Never heard of it in my life.
It's one of the best restaurants in LA.
Okay.
So I'm friends with the sommelier there.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, hey, I'm drinking a lot during quarantine, and I like the idea of not drinking stuff that is very chemically. So put together a case of natural wines for me. And she knows my palate. She knows what I'm into. She knows that I'm into more conventional tasting wines. And she put together a case of 10 wines. I gave her a budget. I said it could be 20 to 40 bucks a bottle.
Okay.
There was, of the bunch, there was one wine that I liked.
Okay, well, the sommelier is bad. She doesn't know what she's doing. She probably doesn't know a lot about natural wine. You have to go to Psychic Wine.
You, again, you're jumping on... She's a very educated. She used to work at Domain LA.
Okay, these people are. Oh no, Domain is good. Domain, the best.
That's where
is
I got
psychic.
The wines.
Domain is great. Bar Bandini is fantastic, and I like Silver Lake Wines. And the guys that run Hippo, forget the name of that place. So in Highland Park, that's great. And John and Vinny's wine shop in the back is great. So she might be great, but a lot of Psalms, even if they know of natural wine, they're brought up in the industrial wine system, and they're miseducated.
Here's the thing. First of all, she's a natural wine somm. She's never worked in industrial. She's super natural wine. We've gotten into this debate so many times, but here's the thing. I feel like...
What do you like? Because I'm going to steer you in the right direction.
I already know. Here's the thing. I have a buddy who has a winery in Patagonia who makes natural wines that are probably my favorite ones so far. Called Chakra. Shout out to Piero at Chakra. They're Pinot Noir and
Chakra.
But I think the problem is this. The majority of natural winemakers, a lot of them, feel like they can get away with a hip label and just call it natural and that's it. But winemaking is a lot more than just using the right ingredients. It's kind of like when a restaurant calls itself, well, we use farm to table. It's like, okay, well, you can get ingredients from a fucking great farm. And if you don't know how to make something, then I don't care if you're farm to table. And my hunch is since some natural wines, like the Morgon from Beaujolais, which to me fucking blew my mind. It was so great. I know that it can be done where natural wines don't taste super, you know, vinegary. And sometimes I think maybe you need to put in some sulfites to tamp down the vinegar. But you can still be natural and have a little bit of sulfites in it.
There's naturally occurring sulfites. Those are fine.
What are your favorite grapes?
I like anything done well. I don't have like a loyalty to like white wine, orange wine, red wine. I like anything done well. And it depends on my mood. And I moved on to cocktails recently, so I haven't been super into wine. But we got to go. Me, I got to take you to Paris, my man.
Oh.
I got to take you to Paris, my little. You're like my little Persian crepe. My little Persian crepe. I want to just throw you across the Atlantic Ocean to Tehran. And I want to slap the Ayatollah in the face and cut eye holes out.
I think he's dead.
Just to give the guy a laugh. He seems tense. The Ayatollah Khamenei.
I was impressed at, or I was surprised that all the hip restaurants in Paris were natural wine places. Did you notice that? Every single one.
That's how I got into it. I didn't know shit about natural wines until I went to Paris.
Really?
I didn't know a goddamn thing.
Then were you
I
got, with Carl Hess?
Did
Carl
schooled.
Did Carl take your hand and
No. I found out that Carl was super into it after I came back from Paris.
There was a place called Le Ver Volet in Paris that
That's
think
the place that taught me.
Yeah, that place is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I ate barnacles there.
Yes. I know what you're talking about. They're like those barnacles are very much in like Spanish cuisine, like in San Sebastian, like every bar has barnacles, but it was kind of wacky to have them in France. But what do you think about those? They were a little weird for me.
Oh, I loved them. I ate everything that came to me there. I fell in love with that city. That was the first time I went there.
Yeah, it's an incredible place. I do think that the LA food scene is like, when I went to Paris, I was in love with a lot of the food, but I didn't feel like... I'm more excited to be eating in LA, I think, right now.
LA has some of the best food in the world.
I agree.
All over the world, and I think it's like some of the best produce and some of the most competitive chefs. Because of that competitiveness and access to good produce, if you have access to good produce, you have access to good animals. So because you have access to the best meat and the best produce, and the chefs are competitive, and it's a major metropolitan area, I think it's some of the best food in the world, I think, in Los Angeles. San Francisco, too. And I had some great food in throughout Europe. But New York, I think a lot of places that are I used to like hold in high esteem, like you eat there and like the quality of the ingredients is like bad or like not. Like just a salad, like the lettuce is weathered and like, I don't know.
Also, I think that New York has suffered and we came up in New York together. I don't know. Were you a big foodie like back in the day when we were like...
I didn't have enough money to be... I had no money. So I didn't have the funds. I was eating at an Indian deli that made microwave lentils for like 5 years. So I didn't have a job. I was unemployed or underemployed while I was out in New York. So I didn't really... get to explore. I go back there now with like, holy shit, look at what I get to explore. But I still think the food in LA is better. The quality of the produce is better. I think it all stems from that. The farm, we have access to better farms.
I think you're right. And I think also the problem with New York right now is the cost of running a restaurant in New York and staying afloat is so cost prohibitive that you basically, if you're not making a crazy profit every month, you're fucked. Which I think as an artist, if you're a chef, it allows you way less opportunity to like push the boundaries, to try different things, to be weird, to try. So I think I feel like I noticed all the menus in New York were kind of melding into very similar stuff. Like you could kind of count on every restaurant was going to have, you know, one of this protein, one of that protein. And like there was nothing really wild at any of the restaurants. And this goes for the super high-end stuff, too.
Yeah, New York is, like, ruined by... they pushed out working-class people and artists. They pushed out creative people. You know, it's just a town run by bankers, so...
Well, that's the thing, and I think everyone came to L.A.
Wall Street powers that be, they ruined New York City. It's just like there's no creativity there anymore. Everybody got pushed out. Nobody can afford it anymore. It's depressing.
It is. I mean, and that's...
The country thing. Is depressing, man!
Jordan Carlos told me that you were thinking of moving out of the country.
I sure am.
Really? Where would you go?
Have you fucking looked at the news lately, dude?
No, I'm just
out in a handbasket.
I'm just at home experimenting with natural wines. That's all I'm doing. I want to send you a bottle of my buddy's wine and see what you think about it.
When you came over to my house and you played piano?
I did. So you have every year you have the craziest birthday party ever.
I didn't get to have one this year. I'm so
heartbroken. It's a bummer, but
potatoes compared to what most people are going through right now.
I know, but Eric would basically fucking rent out a hangar downtown and have you'd have like nudists walking around next to Jon Favreau,
That's always my criteria: filmmakers and nudists just flanking each other.
It's the most fun party of the year, and I think what you're talking about was a couple of years ago, which I did Whippets for the first time.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that? That was my first time. That was
your first time. They're great.
They were very fun. I don't recommend it. No, it was my last time as well.
Really? You didn't like it?
I mean, what? I didn't like it. What am I going to have a fucking like a big fucking gas canister in my house?
Why not?
Oh, but we did have an after party at your place where we played the piano, which was very.
That was fun. I was coming down from drug usage.
I feel like you are the, what's that guy's name? The guy from New York in the 80s who had like crazy parties and he was an artist.
Big J. Okerson?
Yes, you are the Big J. Okerson.
Who are you talking about? Andy Warhol?
Andy Warhol. You're the Andy Warhol of our generation. I believe that. I think that your parties are just like, the most interesting people all in the same place, forced to kind of commingle with weird fucking wacky people that you would never really hang out with. I remember I feel like I've had the weirdest conversations at your parties. I've met the weirdest people. I've had a couple girlfriends out of your parties.
Really?
Yeah. Normally on a birthday party, do you celebrate at a dinner? Do you do a dinner thing? Or do you just do your fucking... I mean, the crazy party is for the people, but what do you do for yourself?
Usually on my actual birthday, yeah, I'll go out to dinner. Or like I used to make it a tradition to like eat a giant Xanax and then like eat two plates of spaghetti. But then I think I just forgot my own tradition I set up for myself. So I usually just have like a nice dinner. I think I went to... that Japanese restaurant in Echo Park, Tsubaki.
I love that place.
I had like a private little kind of small party there.
That place is fantastic. While some, like Eric and myself, can argue the merits of natural wine, there is no official or regulated definition of natural wine. So technically, if someone says you're drinking a glass of natural wine, it doesn't actually mean anything. Some of these natural processes can lead to attractive, strong, and unique flavors, and the lack of additives can make some of these bottles a little better for you. However, because natural wines are filtered, any impurities in the wine are also included in the bottle. Without sulfites, natural wines are less shelf-stable over time and are much easier to spoil. So, I think the best part of buying natural wine is that it gives you an excuse to finish that frickin' bottle of wine before you get home. All right, I'm going to get to these questions, which I ask every guest. What is your earliest food memory?
Gosh, earliest? I think this is a false memory. I remember having like a kind of a big tummy this was like really, really like, it sounds like the predecessor to an eating disorder, but it's not. I never had an eating disorder, but I remember having like, this is a weird early memory where I remember having a big belly when I was like 3 or 4. And I go, I got a big belly. I got it. This must be a dream now that I'm saying that. I got to get unfat. And then like one day I just ate an apple and then the next day I was skinny. That has to be a false memory.
I mean, if it's a real memory, then it would be even better.
I had a weird like early false memory where must have been like in a dream. I also had an old dream where I thought I was like, oh yeah, tidal waves. Like I remember when me and my cousin and my grandma got hit by a tidal wave when I was little. And then I was like, I never got hit by a tidal wave, like a tsunami tidal wave. I'd be dead. And I was like, that must have been a dream.
Yeah.
A dream come true.
Hello. So you're on death row. You got into an argument with a conventional wine person about shitty wine. You couldn't take it anymore. You cracked the bottle over his head. He died. Now you're going to die.
I would just deep fry everything, I think.
Really?
Yeah, because I wouldn't be worried about cancer or free radicals.
So that to you is like the flavor you want to go out on is deep fried? Is that your favorite thing?
Deep fried turkey and like chocolate mousse. I mean, I kind of eat like I'm on death row every day anyway. I'm like frying a turkey this weekend.
Are you really?
It's so good. Should I not do it? I think I should do something else.
No, I've never actually, this is probably one of the few things I've never eaten. I've never had a deep fried turkey. I hear they're fucking sensational.
Yes, it's just really dangerous. You can't do it haphazardly, because if you drop the turkey in and the hot oil splashes out and hits, it's like a gas bomb.
Right.
Like 4,000 houses a year burn down because people can't fry a turkey. So you have to be really, really careful.
I think it's because a lot of times they put in the frozen turkey, which will...
They put in a frozen turkey, or they just drop it in and they don't measure out how much liquid's going to be displaced by the turkey.
I think it'll make for a good death row meal, though.
What if I ate Suge Knight alive as my last death row meal? And like, it'd be like meta, you know what I mean?
Would you eat human if you found out it was delicious? If there was like, if they legalized it and you could go to a restaurant and have human, that was, humanely killed.
What human I'm eating.
It was a free-range human.
I wouldn't eat like somebody who had a horrible life. I wouldn't eat like a child soldier. But I'd want somebody like kind of...
No, you don't want a child soldier.
I wouldn't want somebody skinny. I'd want to eat somebody evil so I may not feel bad. But Roger Stone is too skinny and old. Maybe like William Barr I would eat.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he wants... Like,
kind of young, kind of heavy, and you don't feel bad that they were murdered.
Yeah, I guess you need something with nice marbling.
Probably does taste good if you think about it, because it has another human. I mean, out of all the animals... It's going to have all the nutrients you need.
But I don't know, though, because carnivores don't necessarily... carnivores aren't known for tasting great. Like, I don't think lion meat will taste as good as, like, deer meat. So you need, like, a vegetarian.
What about omnivores? I mean, most of the animals we eat are omnivorous.
I don't know. I think they're mostly herbivores, aren't they?
No, chickens eat whatever. They eat, like, worms and shit.
That's true.
Pigs eat everything.
I would want to eat a vegan human, I think, if I got to choose.
Not me. I want that human. I want that big old boy eating meat.
What is the best high-end meal you've ever had?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Honestly, the best meals I ever had was traveling abroad and eating, like, a home-cooked meal. Like, in Japan, my friend of a friend's mom cooked us a home-cooked meal in her house. In Tokyo, and it was probably one of the best culinary experiences I ever had in my life.
Yeah, talk about an insane food city.
So crazy. And also, same thing in Nepal. I had this meal in this couple's house.
Do you remember what was on the menu at your friend's in
at the Japanese? Tokyo? I ate starfish and sea cucumber, which stood out to me because it was very crunchy.
I've never had either of those, I don't think.
It's incredible. It is not for the faint of heart. If you're not into experimental eating, I wouldn't suggest. It was delicious.
Did you have an insane sushi meal when you were in Tokyo?
Yeah, we had a few. And it was probably some of the best food I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, that place. You should think of Tokyo as well if you're leaving the U.S.
They're a little xenophobic in Japan. I think it's hard to get citizenship, and they're not. They're a little bit cold to foreigners.
What's the best low-end meal that you've ever had?
I love a Wendy's Frosty and dipping my fries in Wendy's Frosty.
Fries in a Frosty?
Yeah.
Interesting. A little sweet and savory. I don't think I would never think of doing that.
So good.
What's your favorite drunk food?
I think I just answered that question.
Yeah, remember? I think you did. You don't soberly put fries into a...
My favorite hangover food is menudo.
That was the next question.
Really spicy Mexican soup or really spicy Chinese soups.
So like menudo typically is made with tripe, right?
Yeah.
It's like a cow stomach. But it is known for being like the best hangover cure.
Don't tell me what's in it.
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to eat it.
You're just saying you were eating sea cucumbers and fucking sea stars. You can't take...
Yeah, I ate bugs off the street in Thailand and shit, so...
Ay, ay, ay. On a lighter note, who's your favorite celebrity chef?
I'm partial to Matty Matheson because I'm buddies with him.
Oh, yeah?
He's just like very charming, and his meals feel like current without being pretentious.
I don't know much about him.
He's great. I love Roy Choi. I think he's very creative. A lot of good ones out there.
If you are trapped on a desert island and you have to eat one food for the rest of your life, you won't get tired of it. What would it be?
I guess a coconut. What grows on a desert island?
You don't have to take it so literally. You can literally, there's a genie there.
I order like a filet mignon and a fucking.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a genie on the island.
There's a genie on this island, so it's a surreal island.
Well, yeah, it's a surreal island.
So why wouldn't I just ask the genie for more wishes?
You can't ask, well, because the genie makes clear there's two things you can't ask for. One is to be saved from the island, and two is more wishes.
What's this genie's motivation?
The genie got kicked out of culinary school, and he basically wanted to prove that actually he does have what it takes. So he gave himself this challenge to get a marooned person and show him that he can feed him something, the same thing, for the rest of his life, and he's not going to get tired of it.
Very, very strange scenario.
Yeah.
A lot of weird events led up to that.
Well, you know, everyone's got their origin story. How did you get on the island? Well, that tsunami from your childhood actually took you to a desert island that didn't right. exist. So what are you eating?
On the island?
Yeah. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be island food.
Sushi.
Sushi. You never get tired of sushi?
I could eat sushi, I think, every day.
I think so, too. Are you a sugarfish person or no?
I like sugarfish, yeah.
I can't get enough of it. Is there a food that you can't stand eating? Something that you hate?
I'm not crazy about a lot of Mediterranean food.
Whoa, shots fired.
Sorry, my man.
You're not into like a hummus baba ganoush falafel shawarma sitch?
I eat hummus and stuff when I'm trying to like eat healthy, but it's like, I mean, anything done well. I mean, I had killer hummus in Israel, like hot hummus, fresh made, hot, served hot, not cold.
Was it hot?
That was good. Yeah, I don't like black olives on pizza.
Huh.
Kind of tastes like somebody put a cigarette out on the pizza.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I love olives on pizza. So what do we do now?
Our relationship ends here. 15 years. From passing out flyers for Dustin Chafin to here.
Yeah. We've come a long way. Look at us pontificating over upscale restaurants.
I know. I'm like, it's everybody fucking turned off by me now.
No, not at all. We have a very food-centric audience. All right, my favorite question. What is your restaurant pet peeve?
That the restaurants do or the customers do? In like what sense?
It's intended for that the restaurants do, but I'm down for what the customers do.
I don't like when a restaurant is like thinks it's the shit and it's like, okay. Like when they're like very into themselves and kind of pretentious. It's mm-hmm. just like, all right, let the food speak for itself. Like, just tell me what to get. Like, I don't know. And like when the waiter has some spiel and it's some like hard to think about, like, you know what? Nancy does things a little different here. And we do things kind of like you order the, and you're like, all right, I'm already out. Like, I just want some fish.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's better to do something, like, simple well than, like, complicated and it's so-so. I don't know.
I'm with you. My spidey sense goes off when I hear, have you dined with us before? Because I'm like, oh, God. Now yeah, I'm going to get the spiel about
before. Well, here, we do things a little bit different. I'm like, you don't have to, dude. You just have to, like, feed us good food.
Yeah, the name on the menu.
We do things the same.
Yes. We do things a little differently.
Dined with us before. It's like atmosphere and service is just as much as important, like vibe.
Do you feel like when people recognize you who work at the restaurant, you get better service or worse service?
Better. I mean, if they recognize me and hate me, they're going to be like quietly spitting in my food. But no, I'd say better.
Eric, what would you like to plug before we get out of here?
I'd like to plug my friendship with Dana Dute.
Oh. Eric's special is on Netflix. It's fantastic. You guys have to check it out. Thank you, Eric. You are the man, and I look forward to doing other new drugs that I've never done in my life at your birthday party.
Sounds good. We will shoot up ketamine together soon.
All right, man. Thank you. This episode of Green Eggs and Dan was produced by Andrew Steven and edited by Jordan Aaron.
Executive produced by Jeff Umbro and The Podglomerate. You can find more of their podcasts at thepodglomerate.com. The theme music is Beautiful Food by Idan, and the interstitial music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like this show, please tell a friend, share an episode, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's really important to us, guys. Please do it. If you want more Green Eggs and Dan action, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at StandUpDan. Also, we have a YouTube page where you can actually see me and my guests going through their fridge in addition to other videos. Just type in Green Eggs and Dan in YouTube. Like and subscribe, please. We need a lot of subscribers on that page. You will really enjoy it. It's a very fun element of the show.
The Podglomerate, a sonic universe.